When you're acting as your doodle's teacher during training, do you know their learning style? Take our exclusive fun and free quiz to find out at thedoodlepro.com/learning and make training more fun and successful. Welcome to part two of my interview with veterinarian and YouTube's Vet Med Corners, Dr. M. She's about to blow your mind at turning topsy-turvy everything you thought you knew about dog nutrition. Have you used the most popular dog nutrition advising site and thought it was reliable? Did you hear that things like corn or meat meal are bad for your dog? Or have you looked for the protein to be the number one ingredient on your dog's food? Well, come listen to one of our experts, Dr. M, as she sheds light on what to really look for to keep your dog healthy. Make sure to catch part one on episode 42 of the Doodle Pro podcast, and let's dive in. This is a fantastic episode. Doodle breed dogs are easy to love, but can be challenging to parent. I'm Doodle expert Corinne Gearhart, also known as the Doodle Pro. And I'm here to help doodle parents have a more fulfilling and rewarding experience with their doodles. No one has professionally worked with as many different doodle breeds or has more experience with doodles than I have. And I love to share my expertise in a fun, compassionate, and non-judgmental way. From my years of work and education in the pet care and dog training industry, I have an incredible network of skilled training, grooming, and veterinary professionals to share their knowledge with you and give you the doodle-specific answers you're looking for. I hope you enjoy today's episode as I help you parent your doodle like a pro. Not everyone gets the opportunity that I'm having right now with Dr. M to be able to ask questions. And doodle parents are very committed and invested in their dog's well-being and health. And it's overwhelming trying to navigate. How do I tell the junk from the science? How do I tell what to look for? So what is your advice when somebody doesn't get to just sit down with a veterinary nutritionist or with their vet? Where should they go for accurate information?
That's a wonderful question. So one of my favorite resources to give to people is actually the Tufts blog. It's written by a veterinary nutritionist or maybe residents in veterinary nutrition. And so I think it's called Pet Foodology. I can try to send you an email with a link to
it. I'll put it in the show notes for our listeners.
Awesome. Yeah. Because they have tons of excellent articles that are blogs, really, that are easy to read and that link to appropriate research studies when people want to do additional reading. And they go through a lot of the real common myths and misconceptions and really lay it out quite clearly. And it is from experts. So that is something that I recommend to people, is that you're really careful about where you get your information from. If it's your veterinarian, a veterinary nutritionist, someone with a PhD in animal nutrition, there are also veterinary technicians who can do specialized training in nutrition. They're pretty rare, but if you can find one, that's awesome. But looking for people with actual expertise and really being critical about where this information is coming from. And it should be like the majority of the experts will agree on the majority of things. If you find a lone voice that's going against what the majority of the experts are, the likelihood of them being correct is just so incredibly low. We want to look at consensus statements from the bulk of the experts, and we would have the most confidence that will be most likely to be correct. In science, you're never 100% about everything.
It's always evolving. Yes.
And changing, right?
Yeah.
So we're just doing the best we can with the knowledge we have now.
I learned from you something I found pretty shocking. A lot of people, you're like, oh boy.
What now?
A lot of people rely, if they look for what's the best dog food, the first thing that comes up is a website, Dog Food Advisor.
Yes.
And you shared whether or not that site, you trust it and why, and you blew my socks off here. Do you mind sharing with our listeners what you learned and what you
tell your followers and clients?
Yeah. So that website was interesting. So it was actually founded by someone who used to be a dentist for people. And so they have zero dog, cat, animal nutrition expertise at all. None.
Yes.
I know. But they're good at marketing.
Yes. And SEO. Yes. I believe it wasn't like their company name related to search engine optimization or something. And
I'm sure.
Oh my gosh. Like,
they were smart about it. And so really what is the current recommendation is to look at the WSABA guidelines. Are you familiar with what WSABA stands for? Or is that something you should share for you?
The okay. World Small Animal Veterinary Association, correct?
Yes.
Did I pass the quiz? Oh, thank God.
Gold stars all around. Yeah, so the WSABA was actually established in 2011. And so they took a group of people with expertise in pet nutrition. They also have groups looking at dental guidelines, body condition score guidelines, vaccine guidelines, everything, anything. They're really trying hard to set up like standards of care for all of these different industries so that we have something to use to help guide us when we're making these decisions. So they started in 2011. I think the actual guidelines came out in 2013-ish. And there are a few of them. And I rely on those when I'm looking to assess an individual pet food company. Because the AFCO regulations are very bare bones and they aren't at all sufficient for judging the quality of a company and their expertise in putting out pet food. The AFCO does not regulate, test, approve, certify. They don't do any of those things. It's essentially, this is the very bare minimum you can trip over in order to sell something. That's what AFCO is. Yeah. And so that leaves a lot of holes and issues that the WSABA guidelines are attempting to start to address.
And when you mention the guidelines and the standards for the WSABA, there are a couple that you have pointed out that you found particularly important. Are there any that you'd like to highlight that you think make them stand out?
What? How long do we have? I
just for a couple examples for our listeners.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. So I believe the total number of guidelines is 9.
Okay.
So we'll just skip through some of them.
Yeah.
So one of the very most important things is whether or not the company has hired someone who is a veterinary nutritionist and or has a PhD in animal nutrition, and that person is working at least full-time, at least one person full-time, and that person is the one who's actually formulating the dog food formulas. Because you can just have anybody formulate these, and as long as a computer calculation shows it's likely to be okay-ish, you can sell it according to AFCO. And the WSABA is saying, not good enough. We want someone who actually has expertise formulating these foods. And if a company doesn't have these people on staff, then it is unlikely that these diets are being formulated as well as we would want them to be when we feed them to our pets.
You shared something else about the rules about their facility, if it was standalone or something that I found interesting. Do you mind refreshing my memory on
Absolutely.
This?
Yeah. So we want the manufacturing plant to be owned by the company, because when it's not, when they use a food packer, they do not have enough control over the quality of the formulation that comes out of there. So we want the company to be testing the ingredients, but also to be testing the end product, because the way that ingredients are used and cooked and ground or not ground, all of those things affect the ability of the animal to use those nutrients that make up the ingredient. And so if at the end product, if your animal's unable to use it, then it doesn't matter what it contains. We need to be certain that the animal is able to get the nutrients they need from that formula.
Oh, that's very interesting, and something I wouldn't have thought of when I was assessing a manufacturer. You shared that a lot of kind of boutique brands or brands that you don't love, that they use ingredient lists.
Yes.
We could be easily misled when it says something like, make sure it's meat first. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a very, I think you're talking about like meat meal versus just meat in air quotes. Yeah. So that is something that drives me a little bit bonkers, because the ingredient list on a pet food goes in order of weight. And so what some manufacturers will do to be a little bit tricky, I don't know of a better way to describe that, to be a bit misleading, is they will leave the water content, say in chicken. It's a very cheap and available protein source here in North America. It's used a lot in pet foods, and it's a great source of nutrition for our animals. They will leave the water content in the chicken when it's being weighed so that it goes first in the ingredient list. But once it's actually processed and the water content is removed, chicken is like 80-ish percent, 70 to 80% water.
Oh, wow.
So once you take that water out, you actually have a lot less of the protein and amino acids that the animal needs. So when you have a meal on an ingredient list, all that means is that it's the chicken with the water already removed.
It sounds junkier, right? Like it sounds like not the level grade that you'd want for the best for your pet when you see the meal part, right?
Yeah, people think that, but it has nothing to do with the quality of the ingredient. It simply has to do with the amount of water content that's in it. So if you're looking at nutrition density, chicken meal will have more nutrients per gram than just chicken with all the water that makes up the bulk of that weight.
That is fascinating. Thank you.
Yeah.
You also kind of talk about, just because of what you in the ingredient list doesn't equate to what's being absorbed by your dog.
Yes. So it's something that I say all the time, and that I'm sure my staff is tired of hearing, is that the ingredient list, it really has very little correlation to quality of the pet food. And this is a huge myth that pet owners, they rely on that ingredient list.
Yes. I mean, we work with what information we can find, right? And it's what's right there. Yeah.
Exactly. But what actually matters is the animal's ability to absorb into their body the nutrients that those ingredients are made up of. So something that's a very common thing that people will get upset about is if they see something like corn in an ingredient list. Now, whole corn, humans know this, you don't absorb it. Yes. It comes right up. But if you grind it up, all of a sudden that corn and the nutrients in it become bioavailable, and the dog can absorb what they need from that corn. And we can use, there's fatty acids in there. There's some amino acids that nicely complement some of the things that are missing from other meat protein sources. Then it can be used and the animal can get nutrition from it. So that's why the way that the ingredients are handled and processed matters so very much. And actually proving with bioavailability testing which means that there's people who are going through dog poop
and
figuring out what nutrients are left in it.
Thanks for breaking that down for us, Dr.
I'm so glad that's not my job.
We all have to scoop it at some point. But yes, it's next level.
Sit and stay right there. We'll be back right after this quick break. Dogs' body language is a foreign language to us humans. Are you wondering how fluent you are? Take our free quiz at thedoodlepro.com/body and find out how fluent you are in reading dogs' body language.
These companies are taking what went in the front end of the dog and comparing it to what comes out in the waste to prove the bioavailability of what the animal's actually using.
That's fascinating.
That's huge. It's a big deal.
And yeah. So it's like when we're told if you take vitamins that aren't necessary for you, you just pee it out, that they're doing similar. So is everyone doing that testing on their food? Okay.
No. Because this is expensive. And so not everybody. And a lot of companies will take their money and spend it on advertising or on bashing other companies and or bashing veterinarians. And they are not doing the research and publishing peer-reviewed studies. And they're not testing bioavailability in a way that I would want them to if I'm going to be feeding that to my pets. Yeah.
I get a lot of clients that are sent to me with human grade, like fresh food frozen.
Right.
And so when you hear that dog food is human grade, that sounds like we're giving our best, right?
Sure.
What does that mean to you as a vet?
Nothing.
Yeah.
It means not. It's a marketing term that's used to like tug at the heartstrings of people, but it doesn't have any influence on how bioavailable the micronutrients are to the dog. How humans absorb food and what we need is very different from what dogs need.
Yeah.
And our taste perceptions and our how we associate food with love and family and all of those things is very different from what a dog needs and how they interact with their nutrition. So just because something is good for people in no way means that it's anything to the dog. And it could be good, it could be neutral, it could be bad, right?
And
So human grade, when I see that, I go, they're using marketing techniques that annoy me. And it makes me less likely to buy from that company because it's such a scam.
Anyway. With the poodle side, which can be override if it's a labradoodle, sometimes it overrides that lab side where they're never satiated. And instead, they have a very discerning palate. I remember my late standard poodle. She would vomit bile before I had an empty stomach before eating something that she found unappetizing. So a lot of people are looking for the food that their dog will eat and get caught in the doodle trap of, you didn't eat it like this? Let me add a little bit more. Let me add a little bit more. Yeah. So what do you advise your clients when they've found the food that meets the nutritional needs of their doodle? And then they say, but my dog won't eat it.
Right. Yeah. So thankfully we have a few companies that do meet WCVA guidelines. And I would never, ever say to anybody that there's one food to rule them all if you're
a
Rings fan at all. Like,
that's my son is. Yes.
I'm such a geek. Okay. But that's just not true. What I might feed to my dog may not work well for your dog. And so we consider things like age and body condition score and size and medical history. And we also look at calorie density of the different formulas. So if you do have a dog that tends to be a bit more of a nibbler instead of a vacuum inhaler, you might look for a formula that's higher calorie density so that your dog can eat fewer cups, get all the nutrition they need. Where my dog will eat any and everything. She is a Labrador. And
there you go.
Oh boy. The whole
world. Let her find the bag.
So I look for foods that are lower in calorie density because I need to be able to feed her more volume.
To try to get satiated. Yeah.
To help her with the satiation and to keep her a bit busier because a lot of her food goes in food puzzles for her. And that is something dogs are, for the most part, fans of working for their food. Yeah. And so you can shape dogs to work for their kibble in training sessions and food puzzles in things like topples and kongs. And that enrichment can also help them to eat.
I use that all the time. I use it with my own. In fact, I've tested it. I have a Cavapoo, Cavalier and Poodle mix that I will even set the food bowl down that I use to fill the puzzle next to it. And the stuff in the bowl is like dead to him. Yep. That is boring, but the value of the food that he gets out of the puzzle, same exact food, is raised so much more because he is enriched while he's getting it.
Great.
Yes.
And that's key. It's a big deal. And it also helps with the satiation because it slows them down and it just gives them something to do as well. It's great for their brains. And even for dogs that have cognitive dysfunction, improving enrichment can help to reduce their cognitive dysfunction symptoms. And so
fascinating. Is that like my grandma doing Sudoku?
Yes.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating. One of the things that doodle parents will try is using some raw food to make the kibble more enticing. So there's some that are sprinkles or patties, or they'll do just the full patty as their standalone. What do you recommend with your clients with those?
Yeah. So are you wanting to dive into like toppers or are you
More toppers as opposed to all raw feeding? That's that would be a whole nother episode, I'm sure.
You might have to hit me back.
So more on the topper side.
Absolutely. Yeah. So when we are feeding at least 90% of the daily caloric intake must be from canned and kibble that meets the USDA guidelines. You'll go over 10% treats, toppers, all of the rest. You are unbalancing their diet. And over time, that will cause problems. And now this is something that most people don't know.
No, I didn't know this. No.
And that blows my mind. But yes, most people don't know.
That's why I have experts. Just like you can't build the medicine and the machines. I can't know all this.
You have to remind myself. But like it's what you're saying is the experience of most people that I talk to. They have no idea.
Right.
And so over time, that unbalancing of the nutrition will cause problems. So we need to be very careful about this and actually calculating what your dog eats caloric wise per day and making sure you're staying under 10% of their caloric intake is something that every person who has a doodle should be doing. And I can also get you an excellent dog food caloric need calculator.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'll make sure to send that to you because I don't know if I have the link super handy at the minute.
That's okay. You can send it to me and I can add it to the show notes for them to
Okay, perfect. Then I'll do that. Yeah, because it looks at, are they spayed neutered? What's their weight? What's their body condition score? Should they be losing a bit of weight? Because a lot of our pets are overweight and or obese and that's like a whole nother topic too. And then it will give you, this is how many calories your dog should be eating per day, which means this many food calories and this many treats, toppers, et cetera, calories. So it just breaks it down for people real nice.
And I knew the calculation. It's so funny. I knew the calculation for how much of their diet's treats versus like their real food, but I didn't think of it in terms of the toppers. So that's so interesting and enlightening.
Yeah. So for a lot of the Kongs and topples and things that I make for my dog, I will use canned and I'll either put kibble through it or I'll even use some water with the can.
Yeah.
Depending on like my dog needs that low calorie density, right? So I'm looking for ways to make the calories last or longer. You might be doing the opposite.
You want me both loud. Give me both.
Yes. I'm going to do this work for me personally. Yes.
Oh man.
Yeah. So then you can use canned food and kibble or kibble and water. Mix all of the above. And then just make sure that you're keeping in that treat caloric limit with everything else that you're adding. So like a lot of people use very calorie dense things like peanut butter.
Yes.
And those quickly go over your daily calories that you should be using for treats. And then if you're also doing treats for training sessions and treats on walks, yeah, you got to watch where all those treats go. And I think because so many people are using too many treat calories, that's a lot of the reason for why so many dogs are overweight, is because they're getting their daily caloric need in kibble and canned food, but then they're also getting 30% more in treats on top of it.
I was just talking to one of my clients. She has a little 11-pound Havanese. And I was like, she was 8 pounds, which was probably on the underside for her. But I was like, she's starting to be a bit of a tank. When it's like my own kids, somebody will point out that my human child, oh, they've grown. I'm like, they have, because I see them every day.
You live with them every day. You don't see it, right?
No, I don't see it. No. But when I get to see her pup once or twice a week and I lift her up, I'm like, oh, she's a little tank. And she discovered that it was her. She worked with her vet trying to figure it out because she was like, I don't add anything to her diet. Like, I follow all the guidelines. And it was the dental chews.
Yes.
She was following the guidelines greenies on the bag of the dental chews, the greenies. Yep.
They're so high in calories. Greenies are a huge culprit.
It's not like a salad. Which is why I'm not a vet.
That's so funny.
But she cut out the greenies and did a half a day, whatever the vet had advised. And beautiful little Beatrice is slimmed down to her fighting weight.
I don't have a small dog, but I do have a cat. For him, it's 250 calories per day. He's small, which means he gets 25 treat and topper calories. That's it.
Wow.
And so then when you think about, okay, what's a cube of cheese, right? That would be all of his daily treat calories. Now, with my 32-kilo Labrador, I have a bit more leeway. But yeah, those small calories add up so fast, so fast.
And I know both you and I, as positive reinforcement and force-free training methods. So for me, I'm not hearing not to use food in training, but I'm going to be planning. Maybe the whole breakfast isn't free. Maybe not all of dinner is free. But maybe I'm using some of that kibble purposefully throughout the day, raising the value of the nutritious food, and I can mix it in.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Each individual will need to problem solve it a little bit for their own need. But like for me, I weigh out the portion because weighing is far more accurate than measuring. Measuring is incredibly inaccurate. So I weigh out the, say, the breakfast portion, and I have that in my bait bag. And then on our morning hike that we always go on, then she gets a lot of it, whatever's left over, she gets in food puzzles through the day. And then if there's something say a rabbit jumps out in front of us and takes off, and my field Labrador thinks that is the best thing in the entire universe, kibble's not enough there. So it's in that situation where I break out a higher value treat for the behaviors that she is fluent in and that she knows well already. Yes, I use kibble to reinforce the bulk of those. And then I'm reserving my higher value treat for the situations where kibble just isn't enough. And you can also cut down your treats a lot smaller than a lot of people do.
The size of a Cheerio is my rule. And people are like, what? But think of how much more you can deliver, how many more reps you get.
Yep.
Versus that big chunk or almost no treats come in the size that I want to be delivering them in.
Yeah, I cut them down real small. I have a cutting board that's for dog treats.
I've made the mistake as my husband's the cook. And he was like, what are you cutting on our cutting board? So that became my cutting board.
Just like how you should have an animal thermometer and a human thermometer.
Yeah. True vet moment there. You mentioned using the weighing and then the calculator. So if someone's trying to see how much do I feed my dog, and they're looking at the back of the bag, they found a very nutritious food that has great standards. What do you tell your clients about how to tell how much they should be feeding them?
Yeah. So the back of the bag will have a recommendation. It legally has to. Now, that is an average starting point. So if you're blending over to something different, you blend over to what is the recommended from the back of the bag. But if you notice after 2 weeks, you should be checking your dog's weight and their body condition score. If they are gaining weight and or their body condition score is going up, then you need to be decreasing the amount that you're feeding them, until you find what works for your individual dog. And even like with my dog in the summer or when she was in agility classes, she needed more calories than she did after her elbow surgery that she had a few months ago. There are going to be things that are going to change it. And so I try at least once a month to weigh her at work, my own dog, to see.
Oh, spoiled that you've got one of those for your lab.
Yeah. But you can check body condition score at home. Or
can
if your
you
dog
define
is,
that for our listeners who haven't heard of that term before?
That's a very good point. Absolutely. So the most commonly used body condition score is a 9-point scale. And so we want our dogs to be between a 4 and a 5 out of 9. And so how we define that is that when they are standing pretty square and you run your hands over their ribs, that you can feel the ribs quite easily. There should not be much padding, if you will, over those ribs at all. And when you look at them from the top, they should have a visible waist. And when you look at them from the side, they should have a visible tuck to their abdomen, so that their abdomen tucks up a lot higher than their rib cage. Now, the specifics of like how much of a waist and how much of an abdominal tuck they have will vary from breed to breed a bit. Like my Labrador has a lot less of a tuck than a Greyhound, right? Yeah. So we will have to go from breed to breed a little bit changes, but those kind of general parameters describe a 4 to a 5 out of 9. If you have a dog that is a 7 or an 8 or a 9 out of 9, having them try to lose weight on an over-the-counter formula is likely not advised.
Interesting. Because,
Because the over-the-counter formulas don't support metabolism well enough, and they don't preserve muscle mass while helping them to lose fat well enough, and they don't support the satiety as well. So when we have those really overweight to obese dogs, there are prescription weight loss formulas to help to support them to lose weight healthily.
Oh, so it's not like you're getting a Jenny Craig and it's just, I'm naming so many brands here. I'm going to stop with such trouble. But it's not because it's prepackaged or labeled for it. But I never would have thought about the muscle mass loss. The satiation makes sense, but I wouldn't have thought about that part.
Yeah. So the prescription weight loss formulas help to maintain muscle mass while helping them to lose fat.
Yeah.
And the other problem is that if you're not feeding at least 75% of the bag recommendation, then you are not getting enough of the micronutrients, the vitamins and minerals. So with a lot of the over-the-counter formulas, in order to get the dog to lose weight, you have to feed them too little of how that food is formulated to be fed. So then you're going to end up not getting enough vitamins and minerals into your dog while you're trying to reduce the calories.
Yeah. That is fascinating. I could talk to you for hours. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Doodle Pro Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. And I invite you to follow me on Instagram at @TheDoodlePro for behind-the-scenes peeks at all of the adorable doodles I work with daily.